from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It has been more than a decade since the U.S., to paraphrase Colin Powell, broke Iraq and owned Iraq. And 2 years and counting now since we washed our hands of it and brought the troops home. Now, Iraq is struggling under a new wave of violence just as its people prepare for national elections next week. Add in refugees, jihadis spilling across the Syrian border, and a whole lot of meddling from the neighbors, and you have a country in real trouble. This hour on Point, Iraq at the edge of civil war. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you forgotten Iraq? Did you serve there? Did you pick up your family and flee Iraq? Is this country headed again for war? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Yesterday alone, over 30 were killed and more than 80 wounded in suicide bombings in Baghdad and other Iraqi cities. The violence has been building for months. Here's the sound from the aftermath of a suicide bombing last month at a checkpoint north of Baghdad. And last week, Iraqi National Security Advisor Mowafaq al-Rubayi told Iran's press TV that al-Qaeda was primarily responsible for the surge in violence, but that violence between different political factions is also a serious problem.
Number one is al-Qaeda. These people, either they kill you or you kill them. There are no third option. But for the politically motivated violence, we need to have, because the root of violence is political. We need a political reconciliation.
Our plan is to go to Baghdad. Our line there has just broken up. But Ned Parker, joining us from there with Reuters, has written this. The Iraq state is breaking apart again from the west in Anbar province. After weeks of anarchic violence, more than 380,000 people have fled their homes to the east in Diyala province, where tit-for-tat sectarian killings are rampant. To the north in Mosul, where al-Qaeda-linked militants control large swaths of territory. To the south in Basra, home to Iraq's oil riches, where Shiite militias are once more ascendant. To Iraq's Kurds, who warn that the country is disintegrating and contemplate full independence from Baghdad. That from Ned Parker in Baghdad. We're trying to get that line open to get him to join us. Right now from Washington, Sarhang Hamas Saeed joins us, Senior Program Officer for Middle East and Africa at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Sarhang, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here with you, Tom.
The reports out of Iran have been pretty dire in these last months. Is this just about tension, conflict in advance of the impending national elections, or is there something deeper going on?
I think that it's both. The rhetoric and the planning for the election has been 2 years in the making since probably the vote of no confidence on Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki because of political disagreement with his administration. But also, as you mentioned in your report, issues have been conflated and compounded with problems in the neighboring Syria. And as the National Security Advisor mentioned, also politically motivated violence.
We have heard our intended guest today out of Baghdad, Ned Parker, say we're still working on that Skype connection, but that we have a country here, he and others say, that is on the cusp, on the brink of potential civil war. How would you describe it?
I think it has the potential to go in that direction, and for a long time, since the U.S. troop withdrawal and the division, the disagreements with Prime Minister Maliki, the hope was that this upcoming election will be the opportunity that will reboot Iraq's political process and will bring new political order that will hopefully avoid that outcome. There is a lot attached to this election, these elections from the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds, and probably all for a different reason. And probably there is too much focus on what this election will bring. It's indeed an opportunity and a welcome development in Iraq. If it happens on time, this will be the first national elections for parliament after since the U.S. troop withdrawal. So it is important that it is used in a direction that will help the country, not enforce the divides.
How do you see the fundamentals of the tension right now, of even potentially the crack-up right now? What are the primary tensions pushing at the seams in the fabric of Iraq?
And here's where, in my view, a lot of the problems lie, is that there is no agreement on what is the problem. From the government perspective, it's mostly that there has been too much talk about terrorism and al-Qaeda and things of the sort. From the Sunnis' perspective, this is a problem of political inclusion and Iraqi policies and laws that have been discriminating against them. Like the de-Ba'athification that was denying them political and economic representation. From the Kurds' standpoint, it is about self-rule and enjoying the semi-independent status that they had in terms of oil policy, economic policy, and other things. So, although there is a constitution that many people in Iraq have voted for, but the application of the constitution is the fundamental problem here.
Let's take those one by one. First with the Sunnis. Americans knew this well. So many Americans died in Anbar province. We remember the names Fallujah and Ramadi. Big violence in that area lately. And just very recently, we heard Abu Ghraib, where the infamous prison was. That's being abandoned now, partly out of fear that that tide of Sunni unrest from the west of Iraq is moving toward Baghdad, right to the gates, practically, of Abu Ghraib. What about that? There was a time in the awakening when Sunni tribal leaders came to the aid of Americans and the central Iraqi government to pull that country out of the grips of al-Qaeda, pull it back together. Where is the Sunni thrust today?
Unfortunately, a lot of that has broken because a number of things were agreed that those who were called the Sahwa, the awakening councils, and the Shia the tribesmen who helped defeat al-Qaeda in these areas were promised integration into the Iraqi security forces. But after the U.S. Troop withdrawal, they have mostly seen the pay cuts and being under attack from Shia militias and from the Islamic State of Iraq and Sham or Levant, as many people call it. Mm-hmm. So they have seen cut in their resources. They have seen an attack on their leadership. And so many of the Sunnis will say that their leadership, that the Americans and the Iraqi government has also invested a lot in building up after they boycotted the political process in the lead-up of the constitution referendum and the government formations of 2005, that has been rolled back. And they feel that they have been under attack from the government. And this is what divides the fight on against al-Qaeda today.
Then we come to the Shia, long suppressed, oppressed under Saddam Hussein, now effectively in charge and powerfully backed by Shiite Iran right next door. Are they governing fairly in any sense, Sarhan?
I think there is a deep-rooted fear from the Shia against the Sunnis because they, and the same applies from the other for the other components of Iraq. From the Shia standpoint, they feel that they are the majority in terms of population, so they are entitled into the majority rule of the country. They feel that there is a threat, and that some of the Sunni leadership, the old Baathists and ISIS, are coming to get them, and they are the fundamental problem that holds back their rule in Iraq and prevents Iraq from going in a direction of stability. So there is this fear factor that some of the Sunni leadership and some of the fighters, whether ISIS or the tribals or the Baathists, are playing on that fear factor, saying that we're coming Baghdad, and there's a lot of activities around security activities in the past couple of years around Baghdad, something that the Americans struggled with when so to attack Baghdad you need staging ground around Baghdad, what has been called under Saddam the Belt of Baghdad.
Yes.
And that has been a lot of change of demographics. Saddam saw the solution to that problem by changing demographics and bringing Sunnis he thought would be allies to him. And the fear now from the Shia government or Shia-led government would be if do you solve the security problem through winning the population and their cooperation, or there is the fear now that are you going to go to reverse demographic changes which will bring new problems?
And then there's the outside hand coming in from all directions here. Syria right next door, where these groups are fighting that border almost vanishing as jihadis, we read, go back and forth into Iraq as a staging ground for Syria. Syria is a raging staging ground for fighting in Iraq. Of course, Iran has deep interests in this government and the Shiite population there. Gulf states with a large interest in the larger Sunni-Shia conflict in the region. Lots of outside hands reaching in, Sarhan.
Absolutely. And Iraq is a victim of all that power struggle. As it relates to Iran, and the Iraqi leadership has always feared that as the conflict in Syria rages on, and if the more Iran feels that it's losing its grip on Syria, the more pressure it will put on Iraq as a sphere of influence for itself and its in the region. And the same way for the leadership in the Gulf, power struggle with Iran continues. They feel Iraq is sort of a front line that they cannot lose, and so unfortunately Iraq is the victim of that. And the border, Iraqi security, 2004, 2005, 2006, those years, there was a lot of pressure on the Syrian government to make sure that the border is protected from the other side. But unfortunately today, the border is pretty much open because, to a large extent, Iraq cannot protect it because of internal problems. Syria cannot protect it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Iraq, maybe at the edge of civil war, 2 years and change after American troops pulled out. Here's Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki speaking last month to France 24 TV. His answer, when asked about all the conflict and violence that's emerged there, was a little tangled, but he insisted that he is not intimidated by all the attacks, said they ultimately won't tear the country apart.
Those crimes are occurring in the past decades. We are not concerned by that, in spite of the victims. But those operations cannot question the structure of the Iraqi society.
Well, maybe not. Talking tough there, but last month, here's Iraqi citizen Rod Mohammed telling Iran's Press TV he sees the surge in violence as designed to disrupt the upcoming April 30th elections, interpreted here by Press TV.
This is a plot to try and stop Iraqis from voting. They want to stop everybody from going to the election polls. They do this by making us scared for our lives.
Well, that's one view. Sarhang Hamai Saeed is with us from the U.S. Institute of Peace, joining us from Washington. And very glad to have with us right now in the studio with me, Luqman Feili. He is Iraq's ambassador to the United States. In Boston, having just run the Boston Marathon yesterday, an accomplishment in itself. Ambassador Feili, first, congratulations on completing the marathon yesterday, and thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me here. And it was a great achievement yesterday for me to do it.
It was a day of joy, a beautiful day in Boston to see it come off so peacefully.
It was a family day. It was a sport day. It was people got closure from last year's terrorist activities.
Yes.
And to us, it was a great event.
It's a beautiful thing. We're honored that you ran it along with 36,000 others. Thank you so much.
It was my privilege.
Of course, it's a privilege of a peaceful society this year to be able to have an event like that without trouble, violence, bombings. Look, we had them just a year ago. But our thoughts are on Iraq today and everything that's going on there. 2 years, 4 months after the last American combat troops pulled out, it must be difficult for you. You're hearing American reporters describe your country as on the verge of civil war, potentially on the verge of civil war. What's going on in Iraq?
The issue of civil war, we hear this story again and again. For the last decade, we've all been saying it. But we all know that the Iraqis, once they agree to the constitution, they have more or less decided to go on democratic open market and also to allow for everybody to play part in the political process. For example, we have no opposition parties. We have no single party who has no representation in parliament without a seat at the cabinet level. So we're working with each other. And as you know, in these type of politics, it may not be the most efficient, but it's a necessary step for us to take.
I know you're a diplomat. Your job is to present things in their best light, and we appreciate that. But the reporting that comes out, whether it's on the security front, where we see so much violence and an upsurge there, whether it's on the judicial front, where there's all kinds of complaints about what's going on with imprisonment and human rights. I'm seeing people quoted here saying there is no judicial system. On the violence and conflict that's coming into Iraq from outside. You've got Syria on your border now with terrible trouble, that trouble coming across the border. You must see these difficult dynamics tearing at Iraq despite the constitution.
I would even call it complicated, not just difficult, because of the multi-layer issues, because of the legacy issues of dictatorship, because of the wars, because of international sanctions, more so because of the regional trouble in the whole region. I mean, it's not coincidental that by the time U.S. troops left, you also had the situation in Syria next door, in which we have seriously have been challenged regarding securing the border without the actual capability, the right capability. The U.S. troops, when they left, they took their expertise with them. We have challenge in redeveloping a new nation based on a new political dynamics with election taking place, peaceful election taking place, in a sense that...
Well, we'll see.
No, in a sense that 60% of the people are participating. In the last few elections, it's been reflected as a fair election. So democracy in action at the time of trouble or at the time of challenges to the country, I think that's a great testament that people have been able to put up with it. And this is exactly where the Prime Minister was coming from.
U.S. troops are gone, but the government in Baghdad came to Washington just in these last few months with an emergency request for weapons and aid. That was sent, that was delivered, attack helicopters and more. Why was that needed?
What we have is, after the troop withdrawal, we more or less haven't had the right capabilities in defending our airspace, in defending our borders. We have a major challenge next door in Syria, where there's no light at the end of the tunnel, which hasn't had a adverse impact on us. So in a way, we need to have the right capability to have control of those issues. I think it's almost natural, and the U.S. administration have been fully supportive of that and understanding as well.
What about security in Anbar, in Western Iraq? Is there even a glimmer of it now? We've seen the actual surrounding and shelling of Iraqi cities by the central government just a couple of months ago in Fallujah, Ramadi.
The government have made the decision not to barge in or go into Fallujah, but have tried to contain it because of the civilian casualties, because we've been working with the local authorities. We also have been working with the tribes in providing them with weapons and capabilities and try to have the upper hand. It's a long process because we're going through very detailed and careful approach to it. If we were going with sort of try to occupy that place, we could have done it easily. But we're very cautious of that.
Sirhang Hamasayid, I guess the question is, does Iraq hold together, even with all these difficulties? I mean, we admire Iraqis who, as the ambassador says, have come out and voted, even in the sense of with a sense of very acute danger around. What determines whether this is just ferment inside a country that's essentially stable, or we tip that next degree further into something like breakup?
I think a fundamental issue that and that the Ambassador Faley has been raising up in our discussions here in Washington, D.C., is striking the balance between justice and peace for Iraq, and I would add to that also security. And this is the fundamental formula that needs to be worked out by the Iraqis that all sides agree to. And so there is way to avoid all-out civil war. The Iraqis, thank God, have avoided it so far, and hopefully they will continue to do so. And after this election, these elections, it's important for the political leaders to come together and realize and what are the issues at stake, what are the grievances that are important for maintaining peace and taking the country in a different direction. So during the government formation, they're ensuring that there is representation of all the components of Iraq is an important one. With the security situation in Anbar and Salah ad-Din and other areas, there is concern about the legitimacy of the election in terms of Sunni representation. And I think that needs to be there could be ways that the Electoral Commission will find ways to hopefully for the IDPs to participate, and this will not undermine the representation of the Sunnis, so that this needed conversation takes place on security. For example, and justice. The arrest of MP Alwani in December and the taking down of the protest camps that the Iraqi government has
in Ramadi and more. Yes.
Yes. Has long been saying it has been an area for plotting terrorist attacks. So that conversation would have had been different if that political tension was not there. So breaking up of the issues and the grievances and agreeing on a common ground after the election is crucial, and that is the path to address, okay, what is justice for the Sunnis and what justice the other components are going to accept. And that has to be combined with security, as the ambassador rightfully said, and the national security advisor also said that there are some people will not engage in dialogue, and there has to be other ways, but dialogue is crucial.
Ambassador Feli, I want to bring that to you, if I may. Let me bring our listeners into the conversation as well. Rob in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Rob, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What's your story?
Oh, hi, Tom. I was deployed in Iraq from 2003 through 2010, 4 deployments, so I really got to see Iraq from every possible perspective. And I think one of the major problems in Iraq, and it's pretty obvious, is that you have too many power brokers that want to see one side win and the other side lose. And there's just so much outside influence involved that there's just a lack of unity in the country.
How did you witness the outside influence, Rob?
Well, I was a military advisor to an Iraqi army battalion. They were a Shia battalion, and we were stationed just outside of Abu Ghraib. So just them needing us more than we needed them. Our job was to advise them, but just the hostile territory where we were at, currently located at, it just created really a lot of havoc between, you know, our capability to advise them and just the influence of, you know, basically the Sunnis and whatever outside influence they were getting from, you know, any outside country.
How did you feel in recent days? How did you feel about the news that Abu Ghraib is being closed, abandoned, Rob?
It seemed kind of inevitable. I mean, just based on where the location of Abu Ghraib is, that's a Sunni stronghold. That's just outside of Nasr Wasalam, just to the east of Fallujah. So there's a lot of Sunni influence there, and it just seems like they have their own interests and the Shia have their own interests, and it just seems like unity is not something that's going to come to fruition, in my opinion.
You did 4 tours. What would be the key to peace in Iraq?
The key to peace would be there has to be some kind of council that can establish unity between Shia, Sunni, and the Kurds up north. The problem is that everybody has their own agenda, and I don't think unity is something that's really going to come to life, honestly.
Rob, I really appreciate your call. Ambassador Feli, here's an American who did 4 tours of duty in Iraq, and you hear his skepticism about the possibility for Iraqi unity, though he says it's a kind of unity council or government would have to be what it takes. In the past, we were told Iraq was so deeply divided that only a strong man like Saddam Hussein could hold it together. And I can see listeners suggesting that again here today, that that's what it takes. What are your hopes for a government that represents difference successfully under one umbrella?
We already have a representation at the parliament which is reflective of the Sunni, Shia, Kurd, Christian, Turkmenistan and others.
Then why are Sunnis fighting with your central government?
It's not Sunnis fighting against it. We're not back to the 2007, 6 or 8 scenarios where you have a turf war, we have a totally different situation now. I mean, let me thank Rove for his hard work in Iraq, and we're pretty appreciative of that. Mm-hmm. And what he's saying, which is, I think, is true reflective, is that we more or less had a zero-sum game. Now we have to move into the win-win scenario, mm-hmm. where all the political parties have to work together to move us into take us into the safe shore. However, what he's also saying, and Sarhanga saying, this is an evolving democracy where everybody is trying to understand what does the new shape of Iraq look like, where does centralization, decentralization, federalism take place. And I think this is a story in the making. We have to be realistic within a decade to have 5 elections, national elections, peaceful, and true representation. So in a way, we've moved far in the political scenery. We need to move far in the economical and social and the social cohesion formula, which people are talking about it. This is where we need to move in. So in a way, I think it's understandable where we are. We have challenges. And everybody else knows that the parliament is only route out of this. And this is where the key issue. Everybody wants to play a part. Even those who are against the new Iraq, they want to have representation in the next parliament, which is a significant step.
Yeah, indeed, that will to participate. Sarhang Hamasayid, there was a kind of Iraqi patriotism that reemerged in the surge period in Iraq under the awakening. That was a force for unity. Do you still see that, Sarhang? Or is there cynicism now about that after these post-Saddam years? Do we have an evolving democracy or an unraveling democracy, Sarhang?
I think we have seen Iraqi democracy evolve, and I think there are threats that could lead to its unraveling. That's why it is important for this elections hopefully to take place, and it will be seen as fair and transparent and inclusive. And after the elections, the Iraqi leadership work together. And there are some definition issues here for a lot of the Sunnis, and a unified Iraq or the unity could mean something. For the Kurds, could mean something else, and for the Shia, it could mean something else. And that definition is very important. And the ambassador provided a breakdown, and I think it's an important conversation for Iraq to have. Whether we call it federalism or not, Iraq's politics have decentralized. The fight that we see in Anbar, the political aspects of it, I'm not talking about terrorism and ISIS, is a representation of Iraq's politics decentralizing, where the local leadership in these areas wanting different ways of application of the law, while the interpretation of the law and the judicial system, the others in the government from the Shia side could see it in a different way. That working out these differences, what does sharing of power mean? And there are things that could decentralize and take that pressure on Baghdad, making sure that you need X ministries so that you hold on to power and you are important. Changing the conversation on the issues, on the institutions, and away from a strong man. We have seen the disastrous experience of Iraq with a strong man. And if the past 8 years is an example of a strong man, we see tension still there. And the institution of the Iraq has the foundation of the institutions that can help it establish that, do this conversation. But it has to happen within the parliament, within the institutions that does this conversation, and with an open mind, accepting new ways, focusing on what Iraq looked like in the 80s as the way to maintain Iraq's unity. Right now, we see it not working and actually going in the other direction. But what will keep the people together, and what are the things they have in common? This is the conversation now needs to happen in these institutions. Differences on the budget law of this year, on the oil law and energy law, national, and also with the Kurdistan region. These are fundamental issues that needs to be discussed within parliament. Parliament has not been able to pass them because there are differences of views, and this could be an Iraq that has not worked, and it should be changed.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Iraq, maybe at the edge of civil war, 2 years and change after American troops pulled out, after nearly 4,500 deaths there, more than 32,000 wounded. Of course, thousands upon thousands of Iraqis dead and wounded, hundreds of thousands by some estimates, in that long conflict. And now, on the near eve, April 30th, of new elections there, all kinds of tensions, some say the edge of civil war. We're honored to have with us today Iraq's ambassador to the United States, Luqman Feili. He ran the Boston Marathon yesterday and joins me today in the studio here in Boston. With us from Washington is Sarhang Hamasayid, Senior Program Officer for Middle East and Africa at the U.S. Institute of Peace. And I want to go to the north now in Iraq to get the view from where the Kurds stand, very important bloc in this whole equation, who've carved out a lot of autonomy of their own. Joining us now from Saran in Iraq's Kurdish north is Denise Natali, Senior Fellow at the Institute for National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University in Washington, an expert on this whole region. Denise Natali, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
What's the Kurdish perspective on what's going on in Iraq? Do they see enough stability that this country will hold together?
There's a second battle front being waged, not so much one using military arms, but one in which there are fault lines that are deepening between the Kurdistan region and Baghdad over this issue of where authority should lie in the Iraqi state. And we are now talking about, I believe, one of Iraq's biggest challenges is who controls the revenues and resources of the Iraqi state. And you have this sentiment, not necessarily, you know, there have been threats on and on that the Kurds are going to break away. And they essentially have no money to break away because they are 95% of their revenues come from Baghdad. However, you do have a stagnation, an inability for each side to move forward, fundamentally different interpretations of the Constitution. And now you are also having, as you discussed, really a regional spillover. It's also affecting the North, not necessarily in the type of civil war or issues coming in Anbar, but nonetheless the spillover from Syria, 200,000 refugees. 8,000 Anbar refugees here. You have trenches. The Kurds now are building, for example, a 3-meter-wide trench and a 2-meter-wide deep at 10 miles at the Syrian-Kurdish border. That's keeping out Syrian Kurds and what the Kurds say are Arab, Sunni-Arab al-Qaeda forces. So the Kurds themselves, while this region is certainly more stable than the rest of Iraq, there is this spillover from the regional, regional influences and pressures here on the Kurds as well.
Denise, just in the last day or two, we've seen news that Iraqi oil output has, for the first time, now exceeded that of the Saddam Hussein era. Do rising oil revenues ease tensions or make them higher as people want their piece of that pie, those riches?
Correct. And I'm glad you brought that up because in the midst of all of this, you know, fracturing, as we say, of Iraq and all of these problems, Iraq has produced more oil than it has in over 24 years. So this is a major accomplishment.
Yes.
And I do see the Iraqis moving forward. This is actually causing tensions in some way, increasing tensions, because the Kurds want control, export control of their own oil as well. So what you've had over the last 7 years is the emergence almost of two competing oil sectors. The Kurds looking at it as Kurdish crude and the Iraqi oil. In and out trying to negotiate, but at the end of the day, this pipeline infrastructure belongs to Iraq. So the extent to which the Kurds will reach a negotiation, because these oil revenues partially go to the Kurds. And they've got Turkey involved in this. And I don't think Ankara has been helpful, or Prime Minister Erdogan has been helpful in negotiating, as opposed to encouraging the Kurds to, be a little bit more antagonistic or less compromising toward Baghdad. So as I said, these regional implications and these regional engagements are not encouraging cooperation at this time.
Ambassador Feili, how do you see the strength of these different dynamics? The longing among those in Baghdad to hold a country together, and maybe those beyond Baghdad as well, versus regional players who have their own interests here, sects within Iraq who have their own, the Kurds perhaps most, who have their own vision of the future. Where's the relative strength lie in unity and disunity?
Well, what we're trying to do is we have a constitution which everybody's trying to adhere to in relation to the economic process, in relation to oil being the wealth of the nation, and in relation to federalism. We're trying to get to the right mix, and bearing in mind that we have democratic process, bearing in mind that we are an evolving new country after 2003, in which all the foundation of the state were demolished. So we have rebuilding it. So in a way, we're trying to find a new formula in an area in which it's not democratic. You have Arab tsunami or Arab spring taking place, and you have the situation in Syria where it's extremely complicated and extremely dangerous. So within that, we're trying to get a new formula to understand the new Iraq based on the geopolitics, which our colleagues have talked about, mm-hmm. and also bearing in mind that over the last 10 years, one of the key successes has been the increase in oil production, because we think that economical development is a key. Getting everybody into the table with the give as well as the take is what we're trying to do. Let me give you a simple example. Mm-hmm. The Ramadi situation, we're extremely eager as a government with an obligation that we want the people of Ramadi to participate in the election. 2005, they didn't participate and mm-hmm. create its own problem for
and
us.
It's, of course, in Sunni Anbar. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So now what we're trying to say, as an obligation and as a desire by government, to say we have to get everybody as much as possible, even refugees displaced, to participate in the election so that they have a stake in upcoming development of the country. And this is what we're trying to do. It's not easy. There is no textbook. There is no Bible to start mm-hmm. from. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to learn on the ground day by day, bearing in mind that we were not democratic. Now we have a democratic process. Judiciary is supposed to have separation of powers and everything else. So the democracy in action is what you see in Iraq.
In a very, very difficult environment. Harold in Quincy, Massachusetts. Harold, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Good subject here. I'm not surprised at all. Our misinformation about WMD got us in there. So we did topple a terrible, brutal dictator. Mm. The Sunni was in power for 35 years. They're a minority. The majority of the rest of the Iraqis, both Shiite and Kurd, were repressed and tortured and murdered. Mm-hmm. We opened Pandora's box with shock and awe under misinformation and the lack of knowledge about the tribal and the religious differences between these three groups. As a result, it's payback time now. I believe that our involvement here, not only did it open up the door of the Shiite to be somewhat allied with the Iranians, it also sparked the Arab Spring throughout all the Middle Eastern areas. We definitely have responsibilities. We lost our men. We've got 30,000 cripples. As a result, Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, Mr. Wolfowitz, and all the cons, the neocons, opened the door to civil war based on religion and sectarian tribalness that we had no understanding of linguistically or culturally. It's a sad result of our interfering in other people's lands.
Harold, let us pick it up right there. Sarhang Hamasaid, what do you make of exactly that interpretation? I'm sure that Harold is not the only one who holds it, of the events of the last decade.
I mean, regardless of what was the reason, I think the reality of what we are today, I think, is what we need to focus on, and what we can do to stop the violence and put the country on a different path that is on, re-exploring why this happened, how it got there. At this point, it will help us inform our next decisions, but unfortunately, it will not change the past.
Does the U.S. have real influence here now?
Definitely the U.S. has a role. That the influence is a different thing. And I think seeing the Iraqi prime minister, two of his deputies and other political leaders and civil society leaders coming to Washington in the past 4 or 5 months, and we hosted most of them at the U.S. Institute of Peace. They all agreed that there is a role for the United States. They may disagree on what that role is, but I think the United States can help.
Ambassador Faley Dexter Filkins of The New Yorker has been writing at length about Prime Minister Nur al-Maliki and Iraq's circumstances now. He says in a long piece in the magazine this week that what happened here was that during the many years of American presence, the new Iraqi state that you described was essentially built around the presence of American power. Now, you take that out and it just doesn't work, that it was built with America as a middleman in the middle, and the middleman is now gone.
What we have is we try to replace that middleman, which was after the destruction of the state in 2003, in rebuilding it in a new shape and a new democratic process or vision. What we have done with our American friends is try to redefine it in the Strategic Framework Agreement, where the United States work with us in the development of our economy, politics, culture element, energy, education. So we have a new formula in trying to keep a strong relationship with the United States.
But the U.S. is not there in anything like the power and presence, of course.
Both agreed, the United States understood, and we as people agreed that we need to have ownership ourselves of these issues. So it's natural for us, but do we need the help? Yes. Do we need friendship? Yes. So the ownership is on us, and this is what we're trying to do, the elections and everything else. Let me just point one key issue. The theme came out a few times about the dictatorship and the strong man and so on. That's a shortcut, which we are not willing to take. We want to have a long view of this. It's easy to go with a strong man and resolve the issues, but will it sustain itself? Saddam Hussein has proven it won't.
Critics would say that your boss, Nur al-Maliki, has taken on elements of that strong man role himself right now.
What we have here is a big question, which is to do with federalism, understanding federalism and the decentralization. And this issue is to do with whomever is in Baghdad. It's not to do with the prime minister per se. It's whomever in central Baghdad understand the full context of the issues. Province is still not clear. The disbursement rate for their budget hasn't been very high, and therefore there is an issue of good governance at the provisional level. We're trying to help the provinces in defining the new Iraq, which is to do with federalism, to do with democracy, to do with economic prosperity. So I think this is where the key questions are. How could we get that right balance? And nobody's saying I have the right formula, by the way. We're working as it evolves.
And a tough evolution. Bill in Buffalo, New York. Bill, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, I hold the president responsible. I feel he made a political decision during the election to appease his base.
Which president are you talking about now, Bill, just to be clear?
President Obama.
Okay.
He was in the middle of an election, and it made a really good tagline to say, I've pulled the troops out of Iraq. However, he's wasted all the treasure that we've used and lost troops over that time. It breaks my heart to think about it.
But we tried, even during the George W. Bush years, to negotiate a long-term presence agreement there, and that was not successful, Bill.
Tom, to this day, we have troops in Japan and Germany. I mean, it obviously makes a difference when you have a long-term view and not just pull out for an expedient election.
Let me take that thought right to Baghdad. Ned Parker joins us there, Baghdad bureau chief for Reuters News Agency. Ned, I'm glad we finally got you. Our caller just calls and says, puts blame for the troubles in Iraq on the Obama administration pulling away from Iraq. What do you say to that, Ned?
I don't think it's because of the troops being pulled out. It's first and foremost a problem of the Iraqi political class and their problems and compromising their lack of trust. I think if you want to criticize the Obama administration, you can say that with the withdrawal, and the withdrawal was very much a fault of the Iraqi politicians as much as any neglect in Washington, because no Iraqi politician wanted to stick their neck out for U.S. troops to stay. And the reason for that was that each side thought that U.S. troops staying and coming out in favor of that, their opponents would use it against them. So after the troops were gone, it's more an issue of how did the U.S. engage? Do they have a plan for engagement? And I think that's where it gets tricky, and that's perhaps where there's a criticism that could be made of the administration. That said, what could anyone do? In the end, America is one country. Iraq is the other. There's only so much that one side can influence the other.
Ned, you've been writing about Iraq on the road to chaos. What's your sense from Baghdad of what's going to determine whether Iraq finds more stability, viability as a unified state, or breaks up, maybe even breaks down into civil war here? What are the determinants?
The determinants, it's a great question. I would say clearly in Iraq right now, security is horrible. The deterioration has been very rapid in recent months. When we look around the country outside of the capital, there are insurgent groups very active within outside of Baghdad, east, north, west, and south. You have an election coming up. There won't be a decisive winner immediately. So you have these very dangerous groups, a moment where the country will have a bit of a vacuum. So, and the rhetoric of the politicians is very much that of sectarianism, that for one's community. It is not a time of moderation. It's a time of hard lines and trying to extract the most from the other. So really anything could lead to civil war. That does not mean it will happen. Hopefully it won't. Hopefully cool heads will prevail. But we are in an unknown. And that was the case in 2006 when there was an election and deadlock over who should be the next prime minister, a growing Sunni threat from Al-Qaeda and extremism all around. And suddenly Samarra happened. And that's where we are now. Hopefully it won't go that way, but it can't be ruled out. It is a very serious danger.
Ned Parker with Reuters News Agency, Baghdad Bureau Chief for Reuters. Ned, thank you for joining us. I also want to thank Denise Natali with the National Defense University's National Strategic Studies Institute, joining us from the Kurdish North in Sauron with us from Iraq today. Sarhang Hamasayid, Senior Program Officer for Middle East and Africa at the U.S. Institute of Peace. And Luqman Faili, Iraq's Ambassador to the United States. Ambassador Faili, we really do wish the very best to your country in these elections and beyond. It's a tough road, but we hope you find a good way on it. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me here.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.